Good morning. This is Gaming Perspectives with
Saul
and Jolene. And today we're going to be talking about psychology in gaming, or the psychology of gaming.
Either way, I think the first one sounds better.
How role-playing games can help you in your daily living.
Yeah, we have been talking about role-playing games as far as having fun and stuff like that. But maybe it does help people in day-to-day life of how to react or deal with people or deal with situations.
What happens is that we've always known that running role-playing games for kids helps them to develop their social skills, right? Because you learn not to punch the dragon in the nose. You learn that you might want to have some empathy for some of the players in the non-character players in the game. But there's actually studies that they have done. And I guess that therapists have been using role-playing for years to help people deal with the fears and how to address certain situations, like in business or in their daily lives where they have problems talking to people.
Yeah, I remember a long time ago when I was in high school, I was talking to one of my teachers asking me what I was doing or something like that. And I said I was going to play Dungeons & Dragons. And he goes, what's that? And I said, a role-playing game. And he goes, oh, is it a psychology experiment or something like that? And I guess when they teach you how to teach or, you know, when you go to college, they talk about this type of psychology experiment of role-playing, of getting into the role of the student and stuff like that. And I think it is a tool by psychology people.
Or therapists.
Therapists and people in that line of business.
Well, when I was in college at Hartnell, I discovered that when you go into psychology or you're a psychology teacher, you may be in there for the reason that you might need a psychologist. So yeah. I only lasted for one semester in the class. I took the whole class. I got an A, but she scared me. And I've dealt with psychologists before and stuff.
Better watch it. Bear's a psychologist.
No, psychologists are good. It's that, I mean, my dad was bipolar, so me and my brothers and sisters have met some interesting psychiatrists and psychologists.
Right.
And you've met them too, that lady named Davida.
Yes, I remember.
So their view on life is a little bit different than the rest of ours.
Well, that's everybody though.
Yeah. But when I did some research on this, I was like, oh my God, there's actually a whole website devoted to RPG research. And it has to do with all kinds of articles that were written about RPG games and what they do to people. Of course, in the 80s, they were worried that, you know, we were going to kill ourselves because those demons might seem real to us.
Right,
that
we're Satanists. We were coming to Satanists. Yeah, I think if you look at it on a practical level, I think you're right about it helping people deal with situations that come up in everyday life, you know, especially if you're kind of an introverted person, a shy or whatever type of person, you don't deal well with social interactions. Let's say you get into a role-playing game. Well, in that role-playing game, slowly but surely, you're going to be dealing with situations. We're talking to other people, you know, and dealing with other players. And I think what's different about doing it in public, so to speak, is that here you're usually with friends, people that you know, people that you feel comfortable with, and you're able to do things that you wouldn't normally do or say outside that circle of friends, right? Come out of your shell a little bit more. You say, you know, you talk in character maybe every once in a while. And we saw a TED talk not too long ago about this guy who says that's exactly what role-playing does or did for him. And he says that it's all about practice. Because just like anything else, any other skill that you develop, a social skill or socializing skills, it's something that you need to practice. And what a better way to practice than practice while you think you're playing a game.
Which is the easiest way to work with a role-playing thing is to make the comfort level good, right? And if you're playing one, you need to get away from the stereotype that all role players are just geeky guys that only have each other to play with and talk.
Yeah, I think it's really important to realize that not everybody is a stereotypical geek. Sure, it might attract some of those socially awkward people because
they're accepted.
Right.
That's the thing about the gaming community. They usually accept people no matter what their social level is. And when I say that, we go to a lot of conventions and I've seen the gambit of very, very social people. Like my friend Mike Jones. He always used to be this guy who would, he never told people he played role-playing games, which was funny because it was like he was embarrassed by it, but he shouldn't have been. I don't know. It was like he didn't want to hear from other people about it. Maybe he had a bad experience or something.
Well, no. I mean, he played in the 80s, right? He played in the heyday of the whole idea that it was a total nerdy game, and the stigma of a certain kind of person that would play the game, and that stigma was totally wrong. You know, now I hear about people, you know, jocks and all kinds of people who played role playing games, but they themselves kept it hidden because they didn't want to be associated with this nerd stereotype.
Well, I always compare Michael to Stephen, and Stephen May, he would tell anybody, everybody, the entire world, how wonderful role-playing games are. But he came to it late in life, right? In right. his, what, 40s?
Yes. And he himself says that he was kind of a shy, introverted person.
Yeah, and he loves it. It's a way it makes him feel, I don't know, it gives him like a rush every time he plays.
Oh, definitely. He's definitely like has that kid at heart type of a player.
So what are some of the things that we actually researched? And I read a couple articles to Saul. So one of them is they say that there was a study done that said that gamers are more empathetic than other people. And they put them through these psychology tests. One was about empathy and one was about something else. And on the empathy test, all the gamers registered a lot higher than the normal group of people that went through it.
You know, what's funny is that it goes totally against the stereotype of this awkward gamer who doesn't know how to deal with social situations. But I think it's because if you role play a lot, then you play the shoes of another character, right?
Right.
You get, you know, what is it, that adage about walking in another man's shoes or something like that?
That, and you also learn from the non-player characters, such as, like, if you're rescuing a princess or something, you have an empathy. Or say that the orcs are holding a bunch of humans hostage somewhere.
Oh, yes.
And they're in a pen, or the giants are going to eat somebody. I think that kind of gives you empathy.
Right.
For the way that the other people feel, especially when you're playing with kids. And you did the same thing with Augustine when he was little, teaching him that it doesn't matter what the troll or the guy with the cyclops that was blind,
the hermit,
all the people, what they look like, it doesn't matter.
Right.
It's about getting to know people, discovering that they really aren't the ogre or whatever.
Right. That the stereotype isn't necessarily true.
And it's not only the non-player characters or being a character. It's sitting around a table with a bunch of people that you know, feeling totally comfortable and making fun of them when they say silly things like, I'm going to jump over that wall. And then someone will go, ha, 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 how are you going to do that? Or I'm going to run across and jump over the crevice of the and not fall into the canyon, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think we were talking about that. And you reminded me of the incident with, I was running a game in Pathfinder, I think it was Pathfinder, and they came across a goblin that was like a runt of a goblin, right?
We've talked about him before, Dink.
Yeah. Dink, yes. So he was this real small goblin, and I don't know how it came about. Maybe they saw the other goblins, you know, making fun of him and pushing him around, and so you're right. You know, the party felt empathy instead of just slaying them outright, you know, when they came across them.
Which is their usual modus operandi.
And they were like eight or 9 years old at the time, my son and his friend. And, you know, we were playing with Jolene and Steve, the parent of the two boys we play with. It was funny because instead of, you know, trying to kill them, they start giving them food, you know, and then they kind of use that to try to get information from them, right? So there was this, you know, there's obviously this role play aspect of trying to get information from somebody that they thought would give them information. And then once, you know, I gave them a name, and once I gave them a little bit of personality, which they already knew a little bit about it because I had already said something about their interaction with the other goblins, they didn't kill them, right? They just,
they let him live in their backpack.
Well, that happened later because he would follow them around. He followed them a little bit, and they just kept throwing cheese on the ground like a trail of in a cavern to get back out. And finally, he, you know, one of the characters, I think it was my son, he was playing. I think it was playing a monk, and he goes, well, I don't have a lot of stuff. I have a backpack. And, will he fit in my backpack? I go, yeah, he's pretty tiny. So he goes, okay. So I put some cheese in my backpack, and he crawled in like Yoda does in the was it the return of the Jedi, but the Empire Strikes Back, and then he stayed in there. He just kept feeding him, and I'm like, are you really gonna have this toothy goblin that might eat your ears. And he goes, yeah, I think he won't hurt me. And so because of that, I decided not to make him an evil character. He was just a desperate character, NPC.
That kind of taught a little bit of empathy.
Right. And you know, you see this person who is being abused, you know, and is not treated very well and is kind of bullied, you know, to use a term that very popular these days. And instead of killing him, he goes, we could use him for information. Two, I want to keep him, you know, I'll keep him as a pet or whatever. I don't know what you'd call
it. We won't go into that. So that's one idea of empathy. And then there's also the idea that role-playing can actually help kids that have problems and people that have problems. And one of the articles that I read was about a group that ran a game in Tacoma for people who were on the high on the autism spectrum. And they were having problems. One of the problems that they had was transportation. Because they were high on the autism spectrum, they had problems taking public transportation for various reasons. They were either scared of it, they didn't know what was going to happen, or they had been made fun of when they were on yeah. public transportation. So the guy, the therapist, came in and he did a two-part role-playing game where he laid out the game was like some kind of gas had been released inside of the public transportation system and it was going to zombify all the people. So in the game, the tabletop game, he used the maps of the transit system in Tacoma, and they had to get on the buses and find the stuff and get rid of it before it endangered the entire population and turned them all into zombies.
That's pretty funny.
So during the game, during the playing of it, they were all comfortable enough that at the time they taught them all the things you need to know to ride the bus.
Oh, yeah. Like, in the game. Yeah.
Yeah. That you and the way you should approach people or not let people bother you, because obviously the people on the bus were turning into zombies. So you could ignore them or, you know, not let them be part of your world. Right. So they taught them well enough that after the game or on one of the next sessions, they actually sent a mentor with them and let them ride the buses. Right. And they were much more comfortable with it because they had learned all the things they needed to do. I don't know how it worked that was just the article that I read. So
that's amazing. Cause you know, here you have real world problems dealing with these people who are, highly functioning, but still have problems, with simple, but he, you know, this is helping people out. I mean, this is helping these, for whatever reason, why they can't, or felt uncomfortable riding the public transportation. And it lets them have a more normal life, right? Then they can have a job or they can go grocery shopping or whatever.
Right. And, you know, so they're not relying on their parents right. to take them places. And what I meant by a lot of people we know is that everybody that you game with is going to bring their baggage with them.
Oh.
Their whatever their the whole fears and baggage, all. Yeah, everybody has that.
The whole world's full of baggage.
So except for us. That was a very interesting article.
That is interesting. And then is that the one that they took it to other cities or something like that?
I don't know if they did that okay. or not. It could have been.
There was another article you were talking about where they were dealing with like people were having problems and they developed a game or a system to run a game and then that would help them out. And then they were asked by other cities to do the same thing. Was it called PAVE or something like that?
I'm not. PAVE was the name of the group that they went and helped in Tacoma.
Okay.
I don't remember what it stands for. But I do know that I'm really bad. I tried to find the article again to give you the name of it this morning, but I couldn't. I saw the list of them, and because he makes me tape this in the wee hours of the morning, so it's kind of hard to remember things sometimes. But the idea about that is great because it can help people with real life situations. And they've also done studies where teenagers that have problems play role playing games.
Right.
And that helps them with all kinds of different situations.
Well, you can imagine, you know, in a practical sense, again, if you're in a role playing game, then you deal with all kinds of situations that you would deal in real life. And but in a more safer environment, because you're dealing with people, usually you're playing with people you know, you're playing with people you trust. So you're able to deal with rejection. You're able to deal with, you have to...
Fear.
Fear, right. Exactly. Overcoming obstacles.
You have to talk to people to figure out what's going on.
Yeah. Role-playing games, you kind of have to talk.
So whether you're playing with people you know or not, you can get to know those people. And I think that helps with the empathy and it helps people to, especially kids, to learn how to deal in situations. Like if you have to walk into a town and talk to the town guard, then that's a figure of an authority.
Right.
And you may be uncomfortable talking to them, but you can learn that they're just going to talk back to you. They're not going to do anything to you other than talk to you.
Oh, that's totally true.
And so, and then you have to talk to, you know, some seedy characters, which, you know, the world is full of seedy characters. And so you can learn, especially in high school, you can learn that they're just going to, you're looking for information. They're going to give it to you. They may want something in return. So you learn how to deal with that kind of thing.
Well, the negotiation and stuff like that. Yeah. And you think about it, you know, if role playing and you're in a role playing game and you're dealing with this, you know, Conan style barbarian, you know, and the GM is like being real jerk about to you and you have to deal with this guy, but you can't kill him because of whatever reason you have to deal with him. So imagine, you know, that could help you when you're dealing with uncouth people in real life, right? When they're being jackasses, well, you know, you can't really, you know, fight them, you know, that, which would probably be the worst thing you could do, but you have to deal with this person and you know, with experience, I'm not saying it's going to solve all your problems or, you know, greatly help you, but with experience and with repetition and practice, kind of, you know, you get to deal with, oh man, okay, so the barbarian, he was a real jerk, so I just kind of ignore what he said and said, acquiesce to him, say, yeah, okay, that's fine, I understand what you're saying, you know, things like that, ways of negotiating out of yourself of a bad situation.
Not only that, but two of the TED Talks that we listened to, one recently and one a while ago, they talked about how that it can help you in business. Role-playing games can help you in business because you learn all those skills, negotiation, how to present your argument, the idea.
That's true.
Especially when you're going to go into battle, everybody has an idea, right? So everybody gives their idea of what you should do. So one of the guys was talking about how this helps you in business meetings because everybody in a business meeting has an agenda, right? And you want to get yours across. Maybe you have something you want to implement or you want the company to go in a certain direction or something. And so you can't be timid in those kind of situations.
Right.
So learning to tell your battle plans and getting everyone to agree that yours are the best.
And get their attention.
Yes. And maybe yours aren't the best. Maybe you learn that sometimes other people have better ideas and you can learn to go with those and put yours in there too.
Well, and you know, working with a group, right? How many times have we been forced to work with a group in real life? You know, when you're in high school and college and that teacher says group project and everybody goes, because we all, I don't know if we all have done it, but if you've gone to college or you know, had a
even
decent
in high school,
they make you do this stupid group project stuff and you're like, who are they going to stick me with? And unfortunately, I don't know what it is, but it always seems like you're the person that gets stuck with these people or not all of them are bad, but one or two are like total slackers, right? They're just there to ride that C and they're going to ride your A for the only A they're going to get in the class. And, you know, they never go to the meetings. They don't do the work they're supposed to do. And you're stuck with this lodestone of a person on your team. And you have to deal with that.
And you still have to turn in the project and get a good grade on it.
Right. And so in role-playing games, sometimes there's a lodestone in your team, right? Like I've heard of crazy people who deal with this team member or the adventurer that doesn't want to leave their bar. Let's say they own a bar. Well, I don't want to leave my bar because, you know, I own a bar. So they got to deal with this guy who's a lodestone and go, well, how are we going to go adventuring with you being in a bar all the time? Or other things, you know, every once in a while there's a
rules lawyer.
Not a rules lawyer, but there's a person playing a character that's kind of like a grumper, you know, a grumpy person that doesn't want to do things or doesn't want to do what the party says. And so you have to negotiate with that person and you have to work with that person because he's in your party. Unless he totally sucks and they say, you know what, you know, you need to stop playing. But even that's part of, you know, working with a group because my son just recently... He was, I don't know what he did, had to film some
it was
Othello,
a
right?
Thing for high school for Othello English class.
So they had to do a scene from Othello. So my son realized that they weren't doing anything, the rest of his group. So he did all the scripts for everybody in the group. And then he tried to get them to go on a certain day. And I told him, I go, you know, groups, this is what you need to learn, is you need to take charge because you can't let other people acquiesce or be real, what do you call it?
Did, if you use the word acquiesce, he probably didn't know what you were talking about.
Well, you can't be like, namby-pamby about it,
You need to be the leader.
Right. You need to take charge because you can't let other people do it because some people won't. And then your group is going to get a big old F.
Or you're going to have to make up statistics because that was the last group project I was in a statistics class. Statistics. And the person who was actually doing the statistics didn't do it. So I just ended up making up MG. The stuff.
Wow,
so,
that's crazy.
So we could get a good grade.
Did it work?
Of course.
Oh, my God.
I'm very devious like that.
That's terrible. That's terrible. Anyway, so, yeah, that's real life, working with a group. That's very critical, working with other people's personalities, right? Because you're dealing with other people's personalities all the time when you're playing in a role-playing game.
And what better way than, you're just dealing with the people that you know their personalities and you kind of know their personalities. But when you put them into a role-playing situation, you learn a lot about people, about how they play, about what they think. Because, our friend Steve, he's the go straight in, do it, and ask for forgiveness later. And that's the way he is in real life. So, that I didn't know that at first. The boys, as teenagers and all teenagers, and even a lot of adults, especially young adults playing D&D or doing a dungeon crawl, it's kill it and find the treasure. And so that's a mentality that a lot of people have in real life, right? You go and you do it and you get the reward. There's no, right. they don't have any qualms about things.
Yes.
And then as you get to learn different things or you get put into different scenarios, then you have to actually think about things. Should I have killed that guy?
Should I kill? Now we have nobody to question.
It's like when we watch NCIS Los Angeles.
That is our guilty pleasure. A lot of people go, how can you watch that? It's really terrible. But it's a fun action type of show. And what's funny is, they're supposed to be investigators, right? And let me tell you, they kill everybody who they could question. They go, oh, he's dead.
Don't shoot him. He's dead.
Yeah, it's hilarious. So, yeah. So you get to learn to work with a group. I think another good aspect or aspect that people sometimes overlook is stress relief, right? So there used to be this game called Jeroen, or they're... It's still around, but it's not published anymore, called Jeroen. And their tagline was, leave your world behind, right? And so that's exactly what role-playing games do. They let you step out of your existence and play in this game where you're in, whatever the situation is, in real life, in the game, either you're in control or you're able to do things that you normally can't do, or just forget about whatever's causing stress in your life, whatever that is, work, family problems, it's just a way of releasing stress or not dealing with it for a little while, escapism, like reading a good book. I think that could be really big part of role-playing games.
Yeah, so if you have a bad day, and I know we've talked about this before, you never know what the players that show up at your table are going to be right. Like. Well, you don't know what they've gone through. Maybe they got fired that day. So, but you don't know. I mean, you don't know. Somebody died in their family, and sometimes you don't want to ask people these questions. So letting them play however they want in the game is within reason, of course. You don't want them killing the other party members and stuff like that. But you can see, people who have a lot of stress, maybe going out and being the tank that goes in kills everything. Helps them to relieve their stress. That way they don't go out and actually kill people. So that's a good thing, right?
Right. No, that's totally true. I mean, when you have a good game going on and you really do forget about the real world. I mean, you really get into the role-playing aspect of the game and you're, in the moment and, those other problems just kind of
fade away for a little bit. Yeah. Not only that, but you get to be with friends, people that you know, especially right. If it's a group that you've been playing with for years or people that you meet with every other week or every week and you get to play with them.
And that's therapeutic in itself.
Yeah, because you're getting together with friends and stuff. So I think the last thing that we really wanted to talk about was this idea of cathartic gaming. And I use that term. Someone said it once and Saul and I have talked about it since then. Cathartic gaming. Why are you playing games? What is your reason, your motivation? Do you use gaming as a way to reach aspects of yourself that you wanted to explore
Some people do, yes.
I've never done that, but that's okay. Although, when after Saul and I talked about it, he goes, well, you always play a sorceress, so what is it that you want to do? Well, I would love to throw a fireball in real life, but people don't let me, and I can't do it. So I understand that in a little bit that you...
There'd be a lot of cars off the running on the side of the road.
Yes.
If, you could throw
if I was allowed to throw fireballs. But there's certain games, though, that we have come out, like Tales of the Loop. And I know some people won't play that game because it's too reminiscent of their high school years. The characters, the actual characters, the jock, the nerd, the it brings the back bad memories.
And
for
the situation
them.
that those kids get into, right? In the game, you know, and I think in the rules it says everybody in the game who's a player has a scene. And usually, you know, and the GM just says, okay, what's your scene of daily life? And from what I've seen, at least on actual plays, the scenes are pretty depressing, right? You know, the one guy, I remember seeing this one actual play where, you know, his dad and his mom are divorced, and he's the kid is with the dad, and the mom is off somewhere where they don't really talk about. But the scene was, you know, he's there with his dad, and his dad is obviously depressed because he's not talking to him. And so he goes and gives his dad a hug, right? And then I'm like, you know, and I go, wow.
That's a little heavy.
That's a little heavy for a role-playing game. And then the other scene is something just as, you know, as depressing or as miserable. And so so I think the creators of this game, I think Swiss? I think they're Swiss.
Like that.
Anyway, you know, I think they were, you know.
They had that teenage angst.
They had a teenage angst and that those problems that prop up with people. And I think that, you know, this was a way of going back and what? And
working it out of your system.
Working it out of your system, I guess, is what
but the problem is that I guess a lot of people in the 80s, if you're my age, and I went to high school in the 80s, a lot of the high school was like that. There were a lot of people.
Yes.
It was very clicky. It had to do with who you knew.
And there was no such,
nerds were not treated nicely.
And there was no such thing as anti-bullying.
What they call
programs.
Emo today. Those people were like, you know, I don't remember what we called them, but if they wore heavy makeup or black makeup or
I didn't have any of those people in Salinas that I remember, but
they were on the edge, the fringes.
Yeah,
of the,
maybe I didn't notice them.
And you know, popular people didn't talk to not popular people and things like that. And I managed my way through high school by just ignoring all of that.
You also went to a lot of different.
Yes,
schools.
I did. That was one of my coping mechanisms. I never got used to anybody. I didn't care if I knew you or not. So, but I guess a lot of people, if they had bad experiences, you know,
they don't want to go back.
Yeah,
and I can understand that. To me, the game is not about that. To me, it's that sense of wonder when you were a kid. It's that exploration and feeling sometimes that you were on your own as a kid because parents just didn't understand, right? And if you add this crazy element of the loop or Kids on Bikes is another game that's about kids, and you deal with situations, you know, supernatural situations or weird situations. And if you approached a parent and told them this weird stuff, you know, they're going to say, well, this is your imagination getting away with you or something like that. You know, or going to the police officer.
So nobody believed you.
So nobody believes you, right? So and that's exactly what this game is about. And people sometimes, you know, that experience in high school was just really traumatic. Now, I hate to say, I didn't have that horrible, traumatic high school experience.
Yes, we know. You had a great high school experience.
No, I mean, I remember some guy calling me names for whatever reason. You know, calling me racial, you know, names at me, but I always felt sorry for him because he was Mexican too, right? He would use these terms.
So you thought he was confused.
Well, I didn't know what he was doing. I you know, if I think about it, psychologically, maybe he was just, you know, he was pointing
he
the
was
attention.
Acting out.
He was pointing his attention on me, so nobody would know that he was Mexican. But you know, with a name like, you know, Herrera or whatever his name was. I'm like, dude, what's wrong with you? You're more Mexican looking than I am.
So not only Tales of the Loop, but there's other games like Why Do People Play Vampire? And I've never played Vampire, so I don't know. But I think it has to do with the power, how powerful vampires
are. Yeah, you know, that, as another game that I've never played. I mean, it was extremely popular in the 90s. And when I was going to conventions, it was like there was a lot of vampire games. I'm like, why do you want to play a monster? And then if you think about it, you're playing monsters, right, that suck people's blood, right? Real people. I mean, not real people.
So it gives you power. So right. that's interesting. It's psychologically, it's interesting. I'm not saying that if you play these games, there's anything wrong with you. I'm just saying that because we were looking at it from a psychological perspective, we just weren't thinking about things. But I thought about, you know, if you're not a soldier, being a space marine has to be the best thing in the world, right? Because you're a space marine. You get to go out and kill things. Or even just playing in a modern D&D game or a modern game where you're a soldier.
Right.
You get to experience that vicariously instead of having to actually do it and with the chance of getting hurt. I mean, in the game, there's a chance of getting hurt, but it's okay because there's someone that's going to heal you. And if not, then you can make a new character.
So I think psychology and gaming, there's a lot of things that can benefit a lot of people in numerous ways. And I'm sure we just covered a few things.
Just don't think about it too much because then you might figure out something about why you do things that could be too scary. So,
okay. All right. I was trying to end on a light note. But
no, I'm just saying that, you know, just enjoy playing games. You don't have to think about why you're doing it.
Oh, yes. I play for fun, and I mean, I've said that many times. But for some people who are either shy or have social interaction problems, I think they could benefit greatly from a safe, good role playing game, and I think that's fantastic.
I agree.
Okay, so I think we're gonna end it there. Yes.
So this is Gaming Perspectives with
Saul
and Jolene. And have a great day.